Well, good evening and welcome to another episode of the John Whitmer Show. Thrilled to have you with us this evening here at your local liberal resistance headquarters, where we thoroughly enjoy the opportunities to make liberal heads explode. I take great pride in the wailing and gnashing of teeth that go on the other side of the aisle, merely by championing the principles of limited government, individual liberty, free enterprise, and traditional values, and listening to the wailing and gnashing of teeth. Thrilled to have you with us tonight. If you'd like to call in, our studio lines are open. You can reach me at 316-869-1330 by email at john@knssradio.com, on Facebook and True Social at The John Whitmer Show, and on X at John R. Whitmer. Reach out. We'd love to hear from you. Had a great weekend. Yesterday was up in Topeka for the annual meeting of the Kansas State Rifle Association. A huge crowd. My buddy Dan Mears, Casey Wolf. And if anybody could turn me into a Chiefs fan, it'd be my buddy Dan Mears. Like I said, if anybody, it'd be Dan. It was a great speech he gave. Just a great time. Congressman Derek Schmidt was there. A number of the gubernatorial candidates. I was able to host a conversation with a number of the gubernatorial candidates. Joy Akins and Dr. Collier were there. Ty Masterson. We had a legislative forum with Ty and Dan and a number of my legislative colleagues, Speaker Pro Tem Blake Carpenter. So it was great legislative forums. We had a bunch of my buddy Travis Couture Lovelady from the NRA. So thank you from KSRA for hosting us up there. Great event. So next year we'll be back. I'm going to hopefully work with them again. I'm planning that event. I think it's going to be in Kansas City next year. So, but when we have more information, we'll share it with you. A couple of events coming up. Guy Benson coming to Wichita August 5th. We'll talk with Tanner Temple from AFP here in a few minutes about that, but he's coming to Wichita on August 5th. Don't forget this Thursday, the 17th, the monthly meeting of the Sedgwick County Republican Party. Got a great event coming up. And then on the 19th, on Saturday, it's Ron Estes's birthday bluegrass and barbecue bash. Our congressman, 4th District Congressman, always has a great party. We'll have information on that on the John Whitmer Show Facebook page, but mark your calendars for the 19th for the birthday bluegrass and barbecue BBQ bash with our 4th District Congressman. Got a great show planned. It's planned. It's not planned. It's planned for you tonight. Attorney General Chris Kobach will be with us to explain why his office is calling on the federal government to investigate Kansas schools, three or four Kansas schools, for illegal social transition policies. They also racked up a huge win defending a new Kansas law banning foreign money in campaigns. Again, Tanner Temple from AFP will tell us about their Saturday is another national day of action and how you can help. And of course, Guy Benson coming to town. Dave Traubert from the Kansas Policy Institute will share with us a staggering new report that exposes how the Kansas Department of Education is basically lowering standards in order to crank up the proficiency numbers. Basically, they want to make their numbers look better, so they're just dumbing down the tests. And Dave Traubert will be with us next hour. And, of course, we'll continue our candidate profiles with Diane Albert from the Wichita School Board. She'll be with us to talk about why she's running for reelection. God knows why. I'm glutton for punishment. But we'll talk with Diane about her. We need her on there because, we certainly don't want it to fall to a Democrat, but Diane will be with us. And of course, we'll be taking your calls at 316-869-1330. So we got a great show planned. Want to take as many calls as we can too. So feel free to call in 869-1330. Before we get to all that though, the mainstream media didn't cover it too much. Fox News did, but last Friday was the one-year anniversary of the assassination attempt on President Trump in Butler, Pennsylvania. And I wanted to kind of look. I did a little analysis to see, what the status of what the statistics say about political violence in America since then and kind of contextually where we're at. And if you think about it, it's no longer a footnote in history books. It's not something that happens you know, over there or in, you know, the Middle East. Obviously it does, but it's not only there. It's not only something that happens in unstable regimes or failed states. It's happening here right now in 2025 America. And the question we have to ask is how? I mean, how did this happen? It's not theoretical. It's, you know, not about mean tweets. There have been multiple assassination attempts against the president. You'd think the left would condemn it across the board, but they don't. In fact, we remember the shocking report that showed that 38% of Americans and 55% of those on the left say that assassinating Donald Trump would be justified, at least somewhat. Let me say that again. More than half of the self-identified progressives in that poll said that murdering a former president and now the current president is somewhat justified. That's not fringe. That's not, you know, the lone lunatic in a basement. That's mainstream thinking amongst half of the modern left. And I mean, that's just crazy. This new report, the one based on a rigorous survey and data from online activity, exposes what they're calling assassination culture. It's not a metaphor. It's not hyperbole. It's culture, an ideology, one that has moved from obscure internet message boards to mainstream digital platforms like Reddit and Blueski. Left-leaning platforms, of course, but still mainstream. And this so-called assassination culture doesn't just condone violence, it glorifies it. It celebrates it. It includes folks like the nut job who carried the bloody severed Trump head down Douglas a few weeks ago, and it's growing. And let me read you a key line from that report. It says, quote, nearly one-third of Americans surveyed and around half of those identifying as left of center believe that the murder of certain public figures is at least somewhat justified, unquote. That's not a fringe movement anymore. That's not Antifa in Portland or some masked anarchist tossing bricks through Starbucks windows. This is mainstream. This is your neighbor who votes Democrat. This is the wackadoodles down there at Douglas and Broadway. This is your kid's college professor. This is that person on Twitter who says they're anti-fascist, who's praising violence against anyone who disagrees with them. This is the American left. And I'm not talking about liberals of old. I'm not talking about the hippies. I'm not talking about Ben and Jerry's. I'm talking about the radicalized, weaponized progressives of 2025. They've crossed a line. They no longer just want to silence us. They want to destroy us. They've convinced themselves that violence is not just acceptable. It's necessary. Necessary to stop, quote, fascism. Necessary to stop, quote, Nazis. Necessary to stop, quote, hate. But of course, they define what those words mean. To them, it's Donald Trump. It's you. It's me. It's Republicans. It's MAGA. That's it. If you're MAGA, you've got the red hat, well, then you're in this group. A Christian conservative who supports the Constitution, up, you're a white supremacist in their book. This isn't just moral confusion. You know, if you're AFP, if you're Coke, you're MAGA, you're a white supremacist, you're a fascist, and therefore you're on the list. It's moral inversion. The values we hold dear, faith, family, freedom, they're being labeled dangerous, and those who uphold them are being treated like enemies of the state. And let me be clear, political violence has no place in a civil society, period. Bold stop right there. And extremists exist on both sides. I mean, we're not hiding that. But let's not kid ourselves. It doesn't match what's happening on the left in scope, scale, or public support. I mean, the right has its crazies. But nobody makes excuses for right-wing crazies. The report shows that while far-right extremism remains largely fringe, left-wing violence is being mainstreamed, rationalized, even celebrated in digital and academic spaces. It's also being excused. It's being justified. We're not just dealing with radicals. We're dealing with a movement that believes violence is legitimate And it's a legitimate form of protest if they feel the cause is righteous enough. See, that's the difference. They're justifying it. They're giving cover to it. They're explaining it away. Well, I've got news for them. America doesn't work that way. We don't settle our differences with bullets. We settle them with a ballot box. We don't torch cars when we don't like election results. We don't torch dealerships because we disagree with the guy who owns them. We work harder to win the next one. We don't assassinate people because we disagree. We engage, we debate, we persuade. We go out and knock doors. That's the American way. And if we don't call this out now loudly with bold apology, we're going to lose this country. We need leaders on the left and the right with the courage to condemn violence in all forms, no matter who the target is. But more importantly, we need everyday Americans, you, to make your voices heard, to draw a line in the sand, to say we will not tolerate this, to reject the ideology of hate and destruction disguised as justice. Civil disagreement must replace this type of hostility. And political leaders must denounce violence without qualification as incompatible with a constitutional republic. So the so-called resistance out there who think violence is your ticket to utopia, you're not Islamists. You're not the future. You're the threat. And those of us who still believe in the Constitution, in law and order, in the right to disagree without being disagreeable, now is the time to speak up. Now is the time to make your voice heard. Now is the time to fight back peacefully, lawfully, and boldly. Because if we stay silent while political assassination becomes acceptable discourse, we won't just lose elections, we'll lose America. I know I won't let that happen, and I know you won't either. We'll take a quick Blake, I'm telling you, somebody put something in the coffee. We'll take a quick break. And then Tanner Temple from Americans for Prosperity will tell us about this Saturday's National Day of Action, how you can help, and how Guy Benson is coming to Wichita. You're listening to The John Whitmer Show. We'll be back right after this. Welcome back to The John Whitmer Show on 98.7 and 1330 KNSS, Wichita's number one talk. Want to remind you about our friends at Americans for Prosperity. Don't forget, AFP's Day of Action is the third Saturday of the month. That happens to be this Saturday coming up. This is a great way to get engaged, to make a difference. You have the power to change the trajectory of Wichita, of Sedgwick County. It's a great way to make your voice heard today. If you want more information, you can visit AmericansForProsperity.org or just listen to my next guest. But, you know, it's a great way anyway. And, of course, while you're online, you can follow the John Whitmer Show Facebook page and follow us on X at John R. Whitmer to get all the latest updates on the show. So, like I said, this Saturday is the monthly AFP's National Day of Action. It's the third Saturday of every month. It happens to be this Saturday. With us now to tell us a little bit about it and how you can get involved is Tanner Temple from Americans for Prosperity. Tanner, thank you for joining us. Pleasure to have you on the show, my friend.
John, great to be here.
So before I get to that, I saw you. You guys had a table up in Topeka yesterday at the KSRA event. And I saw a lot of people over there talking to you about the constitutional amendment that's on August ballot. And one of the things that I happened to overhear part of the conversation, and there was a guy there who was asking you about, you know, well, and it seemed like he was hesitant, which shocked me because those guys are pro-life, pro-gun conservatives. And yet he was kind of pushing back and talking, using the left-wing talking point that, oh, it's going to put, you know, money and politics into our judicial selection. How is it that the left is already getting that message out there? Because that's so not the case. And I'm curious how we're going to help to educate voters that that's such a left-wing talking point from the trial lawyers and whatnot. How are we going to counter that? How are we going to push back on that?
Exactly, John. I mean, as we look at it, the current nominating commission operates behind closed doors.
Yes.
It's dominated by an unelected legal elite. So, I mean, you can't really take the politics out of policy. So, I mean, if you look at the board and the commission they currently have, they're already politics involved in this. And even on the federal model, as you look at things, look at the, what the governor does, if you're running a gubernatorial race, there's going to be money in these races no matter what we do. But we're trying to pull back that curtain so people understand what's going on.
Well, and look at, I mean, look at this commission. You've got five lawyers, five of them picked by lawyers, all lawyers. So the Bar Association is basically picking the majority. The other four, Laura Kelly's picked them all. And so, I mean, you can't tell me that politics hasn't had a huge factor in this whole nominating commission. And then if you look at the Supreme Court itself, this is the most overturned court in the nation. They've had, I mean, they got the Carr Brothers case wrong. I mean, this is so, you can't tell me that we're getting quality justices through this quote merit-based system, because they're clearly not.
Exactly. Again, you know, Kansas judicial system has been repeatedly overturned by the U.S. Supreme Court. So since 2007, 8 out of 9 cases. So, I mean, it's it's one of the most overturned cases of the United States, or overturned courts. So,
right. This nominating commission would put Ketanji Brown Jackson up. I mean, that's how bad this group is. You know what I mean? This is the kind of group that would put someone up there who couldn't define a judge. They would probably think Ketanji Brown is a qualified justice. So I was just kind of surprised that one of the folks there would think that money, because money's in everything, and I don't think money's going to make a hill of beans difference. And right now, if it's good enough for your congressmen, your governors, your senators, your state reps, and right now it's good enough for every other judge in the state except the Supreme Court justices, why not let people have the right to say? Why not let people vote? It's called democracy.
Again, when we go out there, some of the things we look at with even people within our own party is there's a huge education thing we need to do out there. But the more you talk with folks, and even the individual I talk with at the Kansas State Rifle Association is, well, we don't have any voice initially to start here. I mean, it is a commission of lawyers electing other lawyers. So do you want to say on the initial ballot who we're putting in there? What do they stand for? And should we keep them in there or not? So,
well, we've got, over a year to help educate folks, to help basically push back on the narrative. And that's, I think, if I understand it, that's the whole focus of what part of the thing that you guys are doing with these National Days of Action, correct?
Yes, sir. Yep. We'll be out here. So again, this is the following weekend coming up here in August. And originally we were working on the big, beautiful bill. So we are always out here doing things, but now, with the judicial, constitutional amendment coming up next year, that's what we're shifting the focus to. And on our National Day of Action in Kansas, that's what we're going to be doing and knocking doors on.
And if folks, I know the other, by the way, we're talking with Tanner Temple from Americans for Prosperity. The other thing that you guys have coming up, and it's something that I'm really excited about, and that's coming up on here in Wichita on August 5th, is Guy Benson, correct? He's coming to Wichita. You've got a cool event. I shared a little bit of information and a link to it on the John Whitmer Show Facebook page, but Guy Benson's coming to town.
He is. Yep. So, if you don't know, again, he's a Fox News contributor and, a huge, proponent with AFP, but we will be at the Wichita Stockyards Event Center at 6 o'clock on August 5th. So, it is a free event, but we do, ask that we have reservations, but you can check that out on our website at takebackthebench.com or our AFP social pages.
Well, and that's the other thing that I saw in there is dinner's included. So it's just a great opportunity to come. Hear from him, hear from somebody that people may recognize, and get a little educated, find out about what's going on and have a nice little dinner. And so I'm looking forward to it. I think it'll be a blast. One of the other things that I always like to, when I have you guys on, I like reminding folks that if they've got kids that are looking for, or, want a little extra grandkids money and want to make a little side cha-ching, you're still hiring for door knockers as well, correct?
We always are. Yes, sir, John. If you go to our social media pages or our AFP Kansas website, we do have part-time opportunities for younger folks to go out there and knock doors and be active within the community. So it's a great way for them to network and get involved with the issues.
Not just younger. My wife and I door knock for you guys. So trust me, you know, as long as you want to get out there and walk, it might be a little hot, but get out earlier in the morning. Trust me, you can knock. And if they want information on the judicial selection process, that constitutional amendment, ballot vote, how important it is, they can get that at votersnotlawyers.com, correct?
Yes, sir. Or takebackthebench.com. So they should redirect you. Yes, sir. So either one of those will take you to our main page and show you how to get involved. But yeah, we would love to have people come out to our Guy Benson event in Wichita. And again, that's August 5th at 6 o'clock at the Wichita Stockyards.
Tanner, I appreciate you. Thank you very much, my friend. We will we'll be in touch. I'm sure we'll have you. Back on the show as soon as we can, and we'll keep plugging it and keep up the good work. Carry on the fight, my friend.
Yes, sir. Always great to be on.
Appreciate you, brother. Coming up, Diane Albert will be with us to update us on her campaign for re-election to the USD 259 Wichita School Board. You're listening to the John Whitmer Show on 98.7 and 1330 KNSS, Wichita's number one talk. We'll be back right after this. Welcome back to the John Whitmer Show on 98.7 and 1330 KNSS, Wichita's number one talk. You can always listen to us by telling your smart speaker to play KNSS radio. And of course, from breaking news to severe weather updates, just download the Always Live free Odyssey app to get started. And while you're at it, make sure you like and follow the John Whitmer Show Facebook page and follow us on X at John R. Whitmer to get all the live updates, latest updates on the show. Excuse me, pardon me. Every election cycle, we try to bring you as many candidates running for office as we can. Obviously, we'll have one tonight. Next week, I think we're going to have at least one or two candidates. We endeavor to invite every candidate on the ballot as possible to on the show each week. We'll bring you as many as we can. If there's someone in particular you'd like to have on the show, let me know. We will invite them. No guarantee they'll say yes, but we will at least invite them. All that being said, joining us now is Diane Albert. She's a member of the Wichita Public Schools Board of Education, representing District 1. She assumed office in January of 2022. She's a small business owner, Republican precinct woman, and current chair of the Board of Education. Diane, thank you for joining us. It's a pleasure to have you back on the show again.
Yeah, thanks for the invite, John. Always welcome. Always glad to be welcomed on.
Well, yeah, and it's nice to have you on. You've always been willing. Whenever I've asked, you've come on, and I appreciate that. We've had a couple of contentious conversations over the years because, you know, as you know, you and I disagreed on things like the bond, but even when we did, you came on, and I respect you for that. So I appreciate that.
Yeah, thank you. And I tend to go where I'm invited, and so it doesn't matter whether you agree with me or disagree with me. I will go and have a conversation and be honest.
Yeah, and you have been. I appreciate that. Well, and you brought Kelly Bielfeld in, and that was...
I did.
I appreciated that when you were able to arrange to have the superintendent come in, and that was a great conversation that I had with him, and I thank you for arranging that for us. So
yeah, you're welcome. Kelly has the same philosophy I do. We're always welcome to talk about the challenges and the opportunities that are present in the Wichita Public Schools, and we'll go and talk to anybody and everybody.
So it's been a brutal first term. I got to ask, are you just a glutton for punishment? I mean, what prompted you to want to run for, I would think after the bruising that you took over the last, you might reconsider, but why are you running for reelection?
Yeah, so I have a number of political scars and personal scars from this experience.
I'm sure, yes.
It has been a challenging 4 years, but I am on a relentless pursuit to increase student achievement and academic outcomes in the Wichita Public Schools. I'm a product of Wichita Public Schools. I'm a graduate of Southeast High School. I went to Lovature, went to Coleman. I had a great experience through the Wichita Public Schools. We've changed and evolved since that time, and I want to make sure that students have the good foundation of reading, writing, and math to be able to go on and have their potential unlocked so they can go and do whatever they need to in life, whether that be go right into the trades, which I'm a fond fan
yep,
of.
Me too.
I'm in the construction field, or go on to college and pursue whatever degrees they want to in higher education. But I think the the public schools can be a great opportunity for students to receive a good education.
Our family has a Coleman connection too. Our daughter went to Coleman.
Oh, good.
And then went on to Heights. So yeah. So we have a daughter who went through Wichita Public Schools. So we can relate. Let's start with, I know you voted in favor of the school bond issue last year. We can relitigate that if you'd like to, but I think I'll go to this. Would you support another bond if it came up? I mean, it looks like, and I'm glad that they're not going to pursue another bond anytime soon, but would you support one if it came up?
Well, what I'm going to do is support the Financial Oversight Committee, exploring options and exhausting all opportunities to look through the financials and see what are there creative opportunities for the district to explore. A lot of times people don't quite understand this, but there are laws regulating schools.
I'm going to interrupt and say, so what if they said they wanted another bond? Would you support another bond?
So let me tell you what I'm doing in the meantime is I'm meeting with a lot of smart people to go through and see what we can do.
I'm going to interrupt again.
Yeah, no, that's fine.
Would you support another bond?
If the Financial Oversight Committee has exhausted all options and they say this is our recommendation, then yes, I am going to support another bond issue.
Even though the last one failed and, I mean, the voters voted. It failed by a narrow margin, but the voters did say we don't support it. We didn't want it. You would support another bond.
Here's the complicated thing is the way the financials are set up in the state of Kansas for school finance to have large facility upgrades. It is through a bond issue.
Right. Okay.
Even if we had a billionaire come through and say, hey, we want to fund your school system. Here's a big fat check that we want to write to you guys. It would have to be some kind of bond structure that could hold that. And so I don't necessarily like the rules that we're constrained to abide by, but I'm also a law abiding citizen.
Well, a billionaire could come in and just build you a school.
And so I feel strongly that the Wichita Public Schools should abide by the law.
Okay.
And so those are the rules that are set up before us. Whether I like them or not is not what the question is, but we have to follow the rules that are set before us.
Okay. Interesting. I didn't expect that answer. So that's interesting.
It's a very hard world to live in.
It is. That's interesting. I didn't expect that answer. You know, I probably didn't like that answer, but that's fair.
But I'm going to be honest, no matter where I'm at.
You always have been, and I appreciate that. Right now in Wichita Public Schools, just 19% of students are proficient in reading, 19%. 16% are proficient in math. That means that more than 8 out of 10 students are not at grade level in basic subjects. How would you propose the district fix that?
Yeah, so this is why I'm on the school board, is to focus on student outcomes. And so I think one of the things that we have to think about is what has the district done in the past and what is the district currently doing? And so if people are familiar with the state initiative called Blueprint for Literacy, mm-hmm. They have recommended that there is a seal of literacy on every teacher's license. And that is through letters training, that is through other various training options. And that those are structures for on how to teachers teach students how to read. Before the Blueprint for Literacy started, Wichita Public Schools was a leader in this, right? When I got on the board, the school year of 22-23, we started training teachers on letters training. So for people that aren't in the education world, that is a phonics-based literacy. So we're going back to phonics, teaching students the way most of us were taught how to read. And the great thing about that is, for the dyslexic learners, this is a route to teach dyslexic learners, not differently, but because we know dyslexics learn differently, but dyslexic learners need phonics-based instruction. They need direct instruction on how to learn how to read. They can't just learn just by setting a book in front of them. So this is explicit instruction. And so because that has happened in the 22-23 school year was really when that started. So it's about 3 school years ago. We are starting to see growth and trends in the kindergarten, first, second, and third grade reading. We are not seeing that at the state level assessment yet.
Let me ask you about that. And by the way, we're talking with Diane Albert, who's running for re-election to the school board. According to the Kansas Department of Education 2025 state assessment results, according to the Department of Education, the assessment results used new test and cut scores to determine achievement levels. I don't know if you're aware of that.
Yes.
But they used new achievement levels. The percentage of eighth grade reading, for example, proficiency more than doubled, jumping from 22% last year to 46% this year. This has actually caused a lot of people to question whether the department is dumbing down the standards in order to achieve better results, because they literally had literally 100% increase, going from 22 to 46 in 1 year. I'm sorry, you don't improve by that kind of metric unless you're rigging the system or fudging the numbers.
Yeah, so what I've learned in education, so in construction, not that much changes, right?
Right.
A ruler is a ruler is a ruler.
Exactly.
You can go back 30 years, that tape measure is the same as the one that you get at Home Depot today. In education, that's not the same, right? So about every 7 years, they redo the cut scores. And this year was one of those years where they've redone the cut scores.
So do you think they dumbed down the scores, or do you think kids actually just got that much smarter in 1 year?
I have not spent that much time looking into the state assessment scores right now for this year, because they are new. What I will tell you is the state assessment scores that's not great data for us to use to see what's working and what's not working within the district. I prefer our internal scores, we use a system called FastBridge, and that way we can see students' growth, or change from fall, winter, and spring. State assessments are one time a year. You usually get them, after that. It's summertime, right? These students that were in eighth grade are now freshmen in high school. It's not awesome data for us to use to make decisions within the district. So I prefer the FastBridge scores. Because we can see changes. We can see from fall to spring what changes are happening, and do we need to change instruction methods or not.
That's fair. That's
and fair. What I was saying before is we are seeing growth in especially the younger years. So you look at the kindergarten cohorts, so kindergarten and fall into first grade and second grade, we are seeing significant growth there. But like I said, to be fair, we are not seeing it yet in the state assessment.
Oh, that's good. Do you mind if we take a quick break? I know we're on my quarter break, and we'll come back.
Yeah, absolutely.
We'll take a quick break. We're talking with Diane Alberts, who's running for re-election to the school board. You're listening to the John Whitmer Show. We'll be back right after this. Welcome back to the John Whitmer Show on 98.7 and 1330 KNSS, Wichita's number one talk. Don't forget our friends at Americans for Prosperity. They've got their day of action coming up this Saturday. If you want to get involved, don't forget, it's a great way to get involved. And again, from our conversation with Tanner from last segment, if you want more information, you can always find that out at votersnotlawyers.com or americansforprosperity.org. It's a great way to make your voice heard today. With us still to talk about her, a campaign for reelection to the Wichita Public School Board, is Diane Alberts. So Diane, you're right. During the break, you asked, and I am going to ask, it's one of the questions I typically ask, is Kansas has seen significant rise in K through 12 spending with a 53% increase over the last 10 years. However, math and reading scores or standardized tests, including state assessments and NAEP scores, have either stagnated or actually declined in many cases over that same period of time. So do you think Wichita Public Schools are adequately funded?
Yeah, that's a loaded question. Because,
not really.
Well,
have you got enough money?
And our budget is massive.
And I ask that keeping in mind that I've had a superintendent tell me it'll never be enough. Hence, which is why whenever I do school funding conversations, I use the never enough theme song. So.
Yeah, school finance is an exceptionally complicated ordeal. And so a lot of people just look at our big budget number and then think that that's sitting in one bucket. And that
I know the buckets. I'm familiar
we get
with
to
the
pull
silos.
From that one bucket.
Is it enough money? It's just a simple question. Do you have enough?
Well, I mean, we've got some facility needs, and we've got some old buildings. Like North High and East High, for example, and they're taking millions and millions and millions of dollars
a
year.
But the bond,
just to keep the walls up.
But the bond also included new stadiums. It included multiple press boxes. It included some new turf at multiple. There was a lot of stuff.
Putting athletic fields.
Right. And that was not essential for educational purposes. That wasn't money into the classroom. So if you'd done that, if you'd taken that out, because that's not educating, that's not teaching reading, writing, and math. Take that money out, put that into North High's infrastructure needs, maybe then you don't need. See my point here?
I don't disagree with that. One of the things that we hear a lot is building back trust with the public. And, you know, none of us that are in leadership right now are around for the 2000 or 2008 bond issue. And so talking about the athletic fields out at Northeast Magnet, that was one of the things that was promised during the 2008 bond issue. And our superintendent feels very strongly that if promises were made, then promises need to be kept. And so that was an appeal to try to right a wrong. Whether we agree with it or not, he's trying to honestly approach things from, I understand promises were made. Let's try to do right to the public.
So do you think they're adequately funded, or do you think they need more?
Our school district has a lot of money. There is no doubt about it. But keep in mind that imagine 24 buckets, and most of them are restricted on what funds can be used for what. And so I would say reduce and limit the restrictions and allow locals make decisions.
I would love that. I've often felt that they should get rid of the siloing idea and just give you a block grant of money and let the local. I supported that. Actually, Governor Brownback thought of that idea. I think they should always do the block granting. You get X money and let the local districts determine how they spend it. Speaking of money, current board members do not receive any pay. Some districts are considering paying board members. That would be paid through the general fund. So in other words, taxpayer dollars that would or could be going into the classroom would be diverted to pay salaries for board members. Do you support paying board members? And if it passed, would you vote for it? And would you accept the pay if it was proposed?
You like asking loaded questions to me to where it's
same question. So I've asked and I will ask every candidate.
It's very self-serving to, to answer that. So it's difficult, but let me explain to you some of the things that are different from when I got on the board.
These are yes, no questions.
Now. Well, I think to the intellectual people that want to understand the nuances, there needs to be better explanation, because when I first got on the board, there was two meetings a month and that was what the expectation was. And now, since I've been in leadership, I was vice president for 2 years, and now I'm the current chair, there are greater expectations on the board members. So, for example,
I only have 5 more minutes, so I'm going to cut this off. Yes or no, if would you support paying school board members?
I would, because there's greater expectation. Okay. The citizens of Wichita want greater oversight from
members. And I will tell you that you'd be taking money out of a classroom to pay a board member. I would depose it. I understand the superintendent, Kelly Bielfeld, is up for a pay raise. He has already received a 3% pay raise as part of the standard pay increase given to all teachers. Considering the college and career readiness scores of recent graduates and how bad they are, do you believe that Bielfeld deserves an additional pay raise?
Well, I believe the free market also speaks to where pay levels are. And I'll say he's not the highest paid superintendent.
That's not what I asked. Do you believe he should get another pay raise?
I support a free market approach to paying people.
So yes or no, does you think he supports another pay raise?
Yes, because like I said, he is not the highest paid superintendent in the area, but he is the most criticized, he is the most watched over, and he has the highest expectations with the hardest district.
Two quick questions, or three. Do you support school choice, yes or no?
I do.
Okay. The Supreme Court recently sided with parents who want to opt their children out of LGBTQ books in schools. Do you agree with that decision?
I do agree with that decision.
Boys and girls sports?
Absolutely not.
I love that. Now you're working. Now we're cooking with butter here, baby.
Well, I thought we wanted to have a conversation.
If folks want to help you, if they want to support you, what's the best way for them to do it? Diane Albert, BOE on Facebook?
Yes.
Best
you can
of
reach
luck.
Me on my Facebook account or DianeAlbertBOE@gmail.com.
Attorney General Kobach coming up. We'll be back right after this. Welcome back to the John Whitmer Show on 98.7 and 1330 KNSS. KNSS is always here for you. Let's keep it that way. Tell your legislators to keep AM radio in vehicles now. Text AM to 52886 and tell Congress to keep AM radio in cars. And make sure you like and follow the John Whitmer Show Facebook page and follow me on X at John R. Whitmer to get all the latest updates on the show. Well, Kansas Attorney General Chris Kobach is asking the U.S. Department of Education's Office for Civil Rights to investigate 4 Kansas school districts for suspected failure to comply with the Family Educational Rights and Privacy Act. In a letter to the Secretary of Education, Kobach wrote that Kansas City USD, USD 500, Olathe USD 223, Shawnee Mission 512, and Topeka 501 have policies that allow or require teachers to conceal from parents information concerning the social transitioning of their children. Unbelievable. You'd think this was California. With us now to explain exactly what's going on is our Attorney General, Chris Kobach. General, thank you for joining us. It's always a pleasure to have you on the show, my friend.
Great to be with you, John. Yeah, it's amazing that we have four of the largest high schools in Kansas with official policies that require the teachers to conceal from parents or allow them to conceal. In some cases, they're required. Some cases, they're allowed to conceal from parents. The transitioning of their children, of the children. And, you know, this is the ultimate example of schools trying to place themselves in the shoes of a parent and, you know, do a better job of parenting than we parents actually do in their eyes. And it's just absolutely astonishing to me that we have this problem in Kansas.
I don't understand I don't understand how it's legal for these districts to conceal this from parents, but More than that, I just think that this is, I saw their responses. You know, one of the districts kind of blew you off. Another one was just flippantly, frankly, insulting in their response to you. I mean, how are these districts responding to this?
Well, it varies. Now, this follows from a letter that I sent to six school districts about a year and a half ago, and two school districts, as soon as we informed them that they had these policies, because remember, sometimes a superintendent or a faculty will adopt a policy and the school board doesn't even know about it. Anyway, two of them said, oh, really? Okay, we'll change it immediately. But these last four have said, no, we're going to keep our policies, even though we informed them that it violates a federal statute and it violates the parents' constitutional right to control the upbringing of their children. And this has been recognized by the U.S. Supreme Court since 1925, and it was just re-recognized in an opinion about 3 weeks ago, coming out of Texas, a U.S. Supreme Court opinion, that parents do, in fact, have the right to control the upbringing of their children, especially anything that touches upon faith values and other values like those that are derived from faith. And certainly the whole trans issue touches upon that. So there is a constitutional right these schools are infringing upon, these districts are infringing upon, and there is a federal statutory right they are violating as well. And we are informing them that, hey, they need to change these policies. But amazingly, these four districts seem to be saying, no, we're not going to do that. And so, you know, really, it's down to parents and putting political pressure on them, if not the U.S. Department of Education, which, again, we have contacted the U.S. Department of Education saying, you know, look, this is what these districts are doing. We've advised them they're breaking the law and violating constitutional rights to parents. And, you know, the U.S. Department of Education may use whatever funding levers they have to, you know, nudge the school districts back into compliance with the Constitution.
And I'm assuming that's what you're hoping will then happen, is that the Department of Education will say, okay, comply, or we'll cut off the purse strings, correct?
Yeah, and I think that would be the easiest way to bring the recalcitrant school districts into line. But it's amazing that we even have to fight.
Right, I was just going to say that. It's sad that you have to go that far.
Yes, yes. It's just nonsensical, especially here in Kansas, where we have so much going right. And let's not, you know, overstate it. These are only four very large school districts. They're only four school districts. There are hundreds of school districts that are doing things just right and not infringing upon the rights of the parents like this.
And is it any surprise, though, where they are? Topeka,
no.
Kansas City, Topeka, or excuse me, Kansas City, Kansas City, Kansas City. I mean, it's...
You know, and Topeka. Yeah. No, it's not really surprising, unfortunately.
We're talking with Attorney General Chris Kobach. I wanted to ask you about it. It's not related necessarily to you. I mean, well, I guess it is because of the cases that you handle. But we've seen so many, and you've handled, you know, cases at the district court level and at the Supreme Court level. You've argued in multiple cases before the Supreme Court. But I want to ask you about what we've seen lately with these activist district court judges and their nationwide injunctions. Did you ever think that it would get so bad that we would have so many of these activist judges putting out these nationwide injunctions, it seems like they're really just, it's gotten obscene under this president.
Yeah, I saw this coming because we started to see nationwide injunctions, way back during the very early years, even before the Trump administration. The first one is probably in the 1980s. The Supreme Court talks about this in their recent opinion, but they were very few and far between. Where a district court, so you're talking about a federal district court for one state or a portion of one state, says we are striking down this federal statute, federal regulation, or federal policy for the whole country, even though the judge only has jurisdiction in that one state. And so the idea that you could use these really gained traction on the left, and there are a number of district judges who are way on the left side of the spectrum. Now, to be fair, there are some district judges who are very conservative and, I think hold the appropriate view of the Constitution, which is the originalist view that you interpret it according to the intentions and the view of the words that was used by the people who wrote the words. But at any rate, the judge shopping by the left allowed them to go to judges in San Francisco, in New York, and in Hawaii, those being the three biggest targets of the left, find a judge, go to a district where all of the judges are hard left, and then ask for a nationwide injunction. So this one, left-leaning progressive judge who's an activist, meaning outside of his judicial role, he'd like to legislate for the whole country, he renders a decision and shuts down an entire policy. And they really aggressively went after the first Trump administration seeking nationwide injunctions, and now they're doing it against the second Trump administration. And so it's great that the Supreme Court has stepped in, but I don't think we're completely out of the woods yet on this, because we just saw another left-leaning judge issue another nationwide injunction just a few days after The Supreme Court said no more of these nationwide injunctions.
Yeah, I was wondering about that, because the Supreme Court made their ruling and yet another one just did it. So clearly they're going to have eventually the court's going to have to rule again and be a little more clear with their intent, despite what Ketanji Brown Jackson seems to think.
Well, and I think this shows how important it is in our federalist model of judicial selection to really screen these judges carefully.
Yeah.
I mean, there are so many former ACLU activist attorneys who are now sitting on the bench in district courts all across the country, including one that I argued opposite in defending our Kansas law on election security a few years ago. He's now a sitting judge in the Southern District of New York. They constantly, the Democrats in Congress and in the White House are very good at identifying these hyper lefty lawyers and then elevating them to the federal bench.
I wanted to ask you real quick, and I know we've got to let you run. Your office recently had a big win in a case involving the new Kansas law banning foreign money for campaigns. You talked about it yesterday at the KSRA annual meeting. Can you kind of give us a little insight into that before you run?
Yeah, the Kansas legislature this past year passed a great statute that says when you have referendum campaigns on our, in Kansas, in order to amend the Constitution, you have to have a referendum after the legislature passes the amendment by a 2/3 majority. And the legislature said no foreign money. You can't, if you are going to spend money to advocate for one side or the other in a Kansas constitutional referendum, and we have a big one coming up, as I say, in August of next year on judicial selection, you can't take foreign money and spend foreign money, buying TV and radio ads in Kansas. And it's perfectly legal for the state legislature to do so. And we defended that law, and we just won against the plaintiffs who are claiming that that law violates their rights. It's the very essence of self-determination. We in America get to decide our own government for ourselves. And someone from another country cannot come in and spend millions of dollars trying to change what we in Kansas decide we the people want in our Constitution. And the legislature passed a very good statute, and we had success in defending it. So it was a good week.
This was particularly egregious during Value Them Both, wasn't it? Wasn't there hundreds of millions of dollars, a massive chunk of money that came in from overseas in that campaign?
Hundreds of thousands. I don't think
hundreds of thousands. That's right. Yeah.
But yes, there did appear to be a substantial amount of foreign money being spent in that campaign. But it doesn't matter. Maybe it's even if it had never happened before.
Right. Yeah. Good point.
We should have every right to say, look, it's only U.S. money, and we're not even limiting it to money. you know, to money inside of Kansas, but you just got to be an American citizen if you're going to fund a campaign in the state of Kansas regarding our constitutional amendments.
No, that's a good point. Yeah, and you're right. I don't have a problem if someone, I mean, I don't like the idea that Hollywood liberals are, because they did that too during Value Them Both, but at least they're Americans. Yes. So
absolutely.
General,
can I share?
Yes, please.
Before I go, can I share some good news?
Please.
Yeah, the good news, which my dogs are barking about too, is that we just had our crime statistics for calendar year 2024 come out, and Kansans will be happy to know that we are the safest in the past 20 years. We have the lowest crime rate in 20 years, 23 offenses per 1,000 people, and that's down from 27. Really, really low crime in Kansas, and it's been dropping for the last few years. 26% decrease in murders, 13% decrease in property crimes. So great news in the state of Kansas. We are doing some things right, and I'm particularly pleased as Kansas chief law enforcement officer to report that things are going so well.
Well, and I think that's in large part to, you know, the folks that we have on the ground, the law enforcement, you know, our county sheriffs, our PDs, our police, and you and Tony Mativi and some of the folks that we have at the state level as well. So thank you.
Yeah, that's right. And I certainly can't take all the credit. The credit really is due, I think, first and foremost to the local, the sheriffs and the deputies who are out there making arrests and enforcing the law. But there's no question that at KBI, you know, the direction comes from the top, and our efforts to crack down on fentanyl and other crimes have had an effect too. So it's a shared triumph for law enforcement across Kansas and for the people of Kansas generally, because, you know, crime rates also are part of our social culture. And we have a no tolerance for crime attitude in Kansas, and I think that's a great thing.
Well, and think, you know, it wasn't too long ago that you and I were on this show talking about retail theft, and look how that number has dropped, for example.
Exactly. Yeah, that too. The legislature gave my office authority to prosecute organized retail crime. We started doing so, and organized retail crime has come down. So all kinds of crimes are dropping in Kansas, and we're at the lowest crime rate we've seen in the past 20 years. So that's good news, and we should all feel a little safer when we walk around in Kansas, that knowing that we are a very safe state to live in.
General, if folks want to connect with you, what's the best way for them to do that?
If they want to connect on, you know, any political matters, my campaign for reelection is chriskobach.com, KRISKOBACH.com. If they want to just, you know, check into the office and see any of our press releases, any of the court cases that we're reporting to the public, the results, that's ag.ks.gov. Again, AG for Attorney General, .ks.gov. And also, if you go to that second, if you have any experience being ripped off, there's a lot of fraudsters right now trying to text you fraudulent messages. And one of the big ones that's going around right now is claiming that you owe money and that you might be arrested, or that you have taken too long to pay some sort of fine.
I've seen that. I got that text, actually.
Yes. They're going around all over the place. If you think you've been defrauded, go to that website, ag.ks.gov. We've got a great consumer protection division that can give you guidance. And if you've lost some money, may actually be able to help you recover it, depending on the circumstances. So want to make sure people know about that. Great, great resource for Kansans to have.
General, thank you again. Please give my regards to your lovely wife and your daughters.
Will do. Good speaking with you, John.
Thank you, General. We'll take a quick break, and then I want to hear what you think. What do you think about the Judicial Selection Amendment coming up next August? You're listening, not this August, next August. You're listening to the John Whitmer Show on 98.7 and 1330 KNSS. Wichita's number one talk. We'll be back right after this. Welcome back to the John Whitmer Show on 98.7 and 1330 KNSS, Wichita's number one talk. Don't forget about this Saturday. It's the AFP Day of Action. It's a great way to get engaged, make a difference, way for you to change the trajectory of Wichita and Sedgwick County. It's your way to make your voice heard today. Visit AmericansForProsperity.org and sign up. It's a great way to volunteer, get a little exercise. They'll feed you, get a cool T-shirt, and help educate voters about the issues that matter. You can, while you're online, of course, make sure you like and follow the John Whitmer Show Facebook page and follow us on X at John R. Whitmer to get all the latest updates on the show. That's coming up on Saturday. Also, don't forget, Thursday is the monthly meeting of the Sedgwick County Republican Party. That's at 6:30 at the Wichita Area Builders Association. Phil, I understand we had someone who messaged us on Facebook with a question. Is that right?
They had a question, and this was concerning your interview with Diane a little bit earlier, concerning pay for
School board members.
School board members.
Uh-huh.
He didn't want to be on the air, but he wanted to ask that question
about
and kind of get your answer.
The context. So, gotcha. So they're not paid now. What happened is, you remember how the legislature set up that BRAC commission in order to pay state legislators. And now they raised the pay for state legislators. Mm-hmm. When they did that, they created right now, school board members are not paid. They have not been paid. And in the United States, school board members are often not paid. And in fact, in some states, it's actually illegal to compensate school board members. And I will be the first to tell you, it's a thankless job. I would not take a school board gig if you paid me.
I used to do the school board meeting reporting for KNSS.
Yeah.
And I will tell you that that's 2 or 3 hours of my life Monday that I would not get back.
I wouldn't either.
It's a thankless gig. I see it from the seats out there.
Yeah. It's a thankless gig.
Yes.
I agree. So the legislature, when they did that whole pay bill, they added a provision within the statute that gave every district across the state the ability, should the district vote to do so, they could build in a compensation package to pay board members. So each district now, if they want to, the district board could vote to give themselves pay. So the board members would have to vote for their own pay raise. Mm-hmm. So right there, it's problematic. So they're going to have to vote to give themselves pay, which no elected official ever wants to vote for a pay for themselves, let alone in this case where it's not only voting for a pay raise, you're literally voting to give yourself a salary when you didn't get one at all for a part-time gig, mind you. Okay, so let's start there. But this is a growing trend to consider compensating, particularly in the larger districts. The argument is that it would attract a more diverse pool of candidates. It would alleviate, you know, the financial burdens. It would compensate them for their time, yada, yada, yada. That's the argument. Okay. Here's my issue with it. What did Diane talk about? They're financially constrained. They got money problems. They got buildings that they can't. I mean, everything you always hear, the superintendent out of Goddard, who told me to my face, it'll never be enough money. What's our school funding formula song? What is it? It's what's the song that I always play whenever we talk about school districts? There you go. That's it. It's never enough money. So every district will tell you it's never enough money. Okay. So if it's never enough money, how can you possibly justify taking taxpayer money out of the mouths of babes, or in this case, out of the classroom, to pay your board of your school board? Mm-hmm. And that's my argument. I know that they need it, or they don't need it. They don't need it, but they deserve it. Let's say I don't know that. I would say that this is the job you asked for. This is the job you wanted. You knew when you ran for it that it was an unpaid job. It's tough. It's thankless. You get the crap beat out of you. I'm sorry. That's the job you ran for. Now you want pay? Sorry. If you don't like it, don't run for reelection. Mm-hmm. But if it's that hard, then don't run for reelection. But if your district is that desperate for money, you're going to take taxpayer dollars out of the classroom to pay. Now, in this case, how many school board members are there? What? Seven, I believe?
Seven, yes.
Okay, so let's say, what are we going to pay them? We're not going to do the median family income in Kansas, which is about $70,000, but let's say we pay them, let's say we give them $35,000. Let's just assume we give them $35,000. That's $245,000. Now, are we going to give them benefits? Do they get bennies? Do they get health insurance on top of that? But if you give them that, that's even more. Mm-hmm. But at minimum, you're probably talking $250,000 a year. Okay. And now if they're an employee, here's another one. If you're an employee, you now get capers. Oh. Now you qualify for retirement.
Oh, don't get me started on capers. Right. I heard all about this during the
right. So now that you're technically an employee, you qualify for capers. You qualify for retirement, which in Kansas is a public benefit. It's not 401k. You're a full out. So I'm sorry. Again, you knew what you were getting when you ran for school board. It's a non-paid gig. So you're going to take a half or a quarter of $1 million out of the classroom to pay a school board member, or in this case, the whole board. Mm-hmm. And that's just, let's say we did 35. Johnson County, they're probably going to pay him $75,000
a year. It's going to be more.
Right. So how many paras? How many paraeducators could I pay for $250,000 a year? How many teachers could I hire for $250,000 a year? How many, you know, administrators could I fire and pay for $250,000 a year? How many educators? How much money could I put in the classroom? Instead, I'm going to pay my school board member. I'm sorry. I would never approve forcing somebody's property taxes to go up so that I could pay a school board member. Mm-hmm. So whoever that was who sent the message,
there you go.
There's your answer. And I'll get off my soapbox. We'll take a quick break, and then Dave Traubert from the Kansas Policy Institute will share with us a staggering new report that exposes how the Kansas State Department of Education denies lowering standards despite implausible proficiency gains. 316-869-1330. You're listening to the John Whitmer Show on 98.7 and 1330 KNSS, Wichita's number one talk. Good song, Phil. I like this one. Welcome back to the John Whitmer Show on 98.7 and 1330 KNSS, Wichita's number one talk. Want to remind you to stay informed with up-to-the-minute news by downloading the Odyssey app or telling Alexa or Google Home to play KNSS Radio. And, of course, make sure you like and follow the John Whitmer Show Facebook page and follow me on X at John R. Whitmer. Well, as I mentioned last hour, according to the Kansas Department of Education, 2025 state assessment results are using a new test and cut scores to determine achievement levels. For example, the percentage of eighth graders reading at proficiency level has more than doubled, jumping from 22% last year to 46% this year, which has prompted many to question if the department is dumbing down the standards. That or just kids are just a whole heck of a lot smarter in order to achieve the better results. With us now to share an analysis of these results is Dave Traubert from the Kansas Policy Institute. Well, Dave, are they dumbing down the standards, or did all the kids just take their smart pills this year?
Well, good evening, John. Thanks for having me here. I guess it's somewhat reminiscent of about a year ago when we saw tens of thousands of people streaming across the southern border. And the Biden administration is saying, oh, no. The border is secure.
Border is secure,
ignore what you're seeing. I mean, this is just absurd. Of course, there was not that magic turnaround. I mean, this is a trend that had been sliding down. In 2015, that number was 29% proficient. It was down to 22, and now it's 46. Shazam.
Well, maybe Edward James Olmos was teaching the class I mean, all across the state. He was running around. You know, I mean, I read your article, and he had a great sentence in the article, said the only plausible explanation was that it was either the new test is easier, standards are lower, or some combination of the two. And that does make sense to me.
Well, sure. I mean, it is a new test, and they did admit that it's a much shorter test. We don't know if it's also an easier test, but we do know that, I mean, basically came out and said they reduced standards, and then they said, but we didn't reduce standards. So here's the explanation. So let me start by saying you mentioned they set new cut scores. Think of setting the grade level on a test where you might say 90 to 100 is an A. Well, with this new test, they brought in 140 teachers and they showed them the results. And they said, now, where do you think the cutoffs would be for proficient or basic and so forth? And it's kind of like they said, well, let's make 70 to 100 an A.
Okay. I mean,
because here's the explanation. They said, now, last year, prior years, there were kids scoring in level two basic. And teachers knew that that wasn't right, that they really were proficient based on what they were seeing. And so they said that was a misaligned system. Well, okay, so you said last year the standard was too high. We get that. And so now you've reduced it. Oh, no, that's not what we said. Well, yes, it is what you said. Just be honest and say you reduced the performance standard for what it takes to be proficient.
So what, Dave, I got to ask, what are, I mean, the disconnect here, and I've had this conversation with multiple educators and the folks who are saying that we're being mean, the folks who accuse you of saying that you hate kids or you hate teachers. And I push back on that immediately. And so I say, no, I hate mediocrity, but you know, they immediately say that the other counterpunch that they use is graduation rates. Oh, but the graduation rates, I mean, Kelly Bielfeld, I interviewed him a while back, and he said, our graduation rates are 84%. And of course, I immediately said, yeah, but if you're graduating kids that can't read and write, what does it matter? What are college admission folks saying about these kids?
Employers are saying they cannot hire a lot of these kids right out of high school, because they don't have the basic math and reading skills. College professors are saying 40 to 60% of kids, depending upon whether it's the community college or the four-year whatever, need remedial training. They have to take makeup courses to learn what they didn't get in high school before they can start taking real college courses. They have to pay for those, and they don't count toward graduation. Everybody knows that outcomes are insufficient. You look at the college readiness in English, reading, math, and science. In 2015, it was 32%. Not good at all. Now it's 18%. But don't believe your lying eyes. Things aren't going down. They say, well, it's not accurate. You know, researchers will look for confirmation. They'll look to other data sets. They'll repeat tests and see if there's outliers to test assumptions. Well, when you see outcomes declining on the ACT and you see outcomes declining on the National Assessment of Educational Progress, and they had been declining on the state assessment, to see a hockey stick jump up now is just not believable. And yet they say that, no, this is comparable. This is comparable. That's whenever in history there has been a new state assessment come out, they have been very specific in saying you may not compare one test to another. Doesn't work. It's a different test. It's different standards. That applies now. They say that those are the cases now. But now all of a sudden you can compare one to the next. It's just not believable.
We're talking with Dave Traubert from the Kansas Policy Institute. Another story that I've seen, it's the media is not really given a whole lot of cover, but it's this story that's been kind of sneaking out lately, and it's about how students are taking multiple catch-up classes or credits or doing little papers in order to make up the necessary requirements to graduate. But even teachers are starting to say, well, you know, just because you turn in a paper or you take this little pop-up quiz or you go do an online thing doesn't necessarily mean that you've fulfilled the requirements, but you did it, so we're going to graduate you. Are you familiar with this story, Dave?
Yeah, of course. I mean, whether you call it grade inflation.
Yeah, grade inflation, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, there's a number of things. It's just not, and again, it doesn't comport. You're seeing college readiness decline, and you're seeing graduation rates increase. What's wrong with that picture?
And why are districts doing this? Is it basically because they just want that graduation rate up, so they're trying to make it easier so the kid can graduate? I mean, what's the incentive to the district for this, as opposed to actually having a kid who is ready for life?
Well, it's a number of things, John. I mean, this is just my educated opinion, of course. But education administrators, local school board, state school board, they all want kids to do better. They really do.
Yeah.
But for a lot of them, they draw the line at having to change their behaviors in order to make that happen. That's not going to go. We are not going to change what we're doing. And now you think about it, for years, for decades, you've had a lot of administrators saying things are fine. You've had the KASB saying Kansas is in the top 10 of all the states. Never was true. They didn't care. They got media to print it. So everybody is thinking things are well. Now, how, if you've been pushing that story for decades, how do you turn around and say, yeah, well, they really aren't? It puts them in a pickle. And now think about this also. You're talking about administrators who started out as teachers, and then they became principals, and then some other administrator, and now they're superintendents. Nowhere along the way were they ever trained in how to run a results-oriented, accountable organization. It's not their fault. They don't have that skill set. And then when they're looking upstream and they see the Department of Education making things up, and they see the legislature not willing to take action, even when audits say, for example, they're not spending this $500 million according to state law, nobody does anything and everybody else is making excuses. I don't know where to start. So what do? I kind of go along with it. It's not their fault. We need to take the attitude that, look, we are where we are, and no one's to blame for where we are, but we're all responsible for moving forward.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, we'll see. I mean, I know that there's a new funding formula interim committee that's working. It'll be very interesting to see what they come up with. If folks want to connect with you guys, you do some wonderful reporting, some investigative journalism, something the media doesn't do anymore, certainly not the Wichita Eagle. They can find some great articles of yours. It's at sentinelksmo.org, correct?
Yes, and at kansaspolicy.org.
Dave, I appreciate you as always. It's always a pleasure having you on the show, my friend.
Thanks for having us, John.
We'll take a quick break, and then I want to hear from you. We'll hear what do you think? I mean, are we getting our bang for our bucks out of the K-12 education system? Maybe I'm just being too harsh. Maybe that's it. It's possible. Lord knows. I've been called that. Our studio lines are open, 316-869-1330. You're listening to the John Whitmer Show on 98.7 and 1330 KNSS, Wichita's number one talk. We'll be back right after this. Welcome back to the John Whitmer Show on 98.7 and 1330 KNSS, Wichita's number one talk. Don't forget, this Saturday is AFP's Day of Action. If you want to get engaged, make a difference, visit AmericansForProsperity.org. It's a great way to get involved. We got a couple of callers. Very interested in talking to my first caller, Richard, who's a substitute teacher here in Wichita. Would love to hear your takes, particularly, and we're going to have a couple of school board candidates on next Sunday as well. So, Richard, thank you for joining us.
You're welcome. I was stunned when I found out that we're actually admitting that we're going back to phonics, because when you substitute for an elementary teacher and it comes to the reading or the intermediate reading, which is otherwise known as remedial, we just changed the word because we don't want to offend the students or, you know, give them a complex.
Right.
And you ask one of the other teachers, you go, okay, so we're going back to phonics. Oh, no, not really. Well, we're teaching them sound. Change this sound and it changes that word. Isn't that phonics? No, not really. Yet your school board member said that's exactly what it is.
Yep. Well, she's the head of the school board, so she would know.
Yeah, exactly. Small problem when you do that. I would look at it. It would tell me to tell them to change the sound, and they did. And it became a new word. The only problem was the two letters in the middle we were changing did not spell the new word correctly. It sounded the same, you know, so they'll be able to say it. They just won't be able to recognize it when they see it or write it if they want to. But other than that, no real challenge there. Yeah, we also had, I was in one of the middle schools, it still remained nameless, And the entire class, all 8 hours, all day long, was eighth grade, essentially remedial math. I can't remember the actual word for it, but it's remedial math. All of those students also had a regular math class. I actually ran the numbers off of the attendance sheet. 80% of the eighth graders were enrolled in that class.
I was just going to say, how is that possible? How do you have 80% of the students in a class in remedial?
Well, they didn't perform well enough in their seventh grade math class, and we got to get them ready to go to high school. With the misinterpretation of No Child Left Behind, they're going to go anyway.
Do we not hold kids back anymore?
Oh, God, no. Oh, Lord, no.
See, that's part of our problem. I mean, I'm not that old. I mean, I'm in my 50s. But back when I was in school, if you didn't pass, well, they held you back.
I got a better one for you. Okay? Got a class of eighth graders. Okay? That school still remain, and subjects still remain anonymous as well. But I had five of them, that not only had a solid F in the class I was substituting for, but because progress reports had to be done during that particular, had just been done, I could see what, it was still in the system for me to look at. Not only did they have a solid F in the class I was substituting for, they had a solid F. And I'm not talking about a few more points would have got them to a D. I'm talking flat, solid zero F in every one of their eight classes. All five of them will go to high school next year.
And see, here's the other question. How come we're not firing teachers? I mean, don't get me wrong. My mother was a teacher. My sister's a teacher. I've got a daughter-in-law who's a teacher. I love teachers, but I want teachers who are doing a freaking job. And if they're not, then they need to be able to be released to go be successful elsewhere. And that's another, but that comes down to the unions, in my opinion. But Richard,
ding, 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 ding. Ask your sister and your daughter-in-law if they pay their NEA or AFT dues, how hard it would be to actually fire them.
Exactly. Yep.
But here's the deal. In deference to the teachers, okay, if your kid, as they say, passively fails or quietly fails, as in literally comes into the class, puts their head down on the desk and sleeps entire hour every day of the week that they're in class, and they know that they will go to the next class, how do you motivate that?
That's a good question. Yeah, and at least they were there. So I guess they were at least in class. Richard, I appreciate the call, my friend. I know we've got Chris and McPherson on the line. I don't think I'm going to be able to get to you, but if you call next Sunday, I will take your call, my friend. I love McPherson. My wife and I love to come up for the Highland Games because I'm Scottish. I'm a MacLeod. But in the meantime, carry on, fellow deplorables.